You're planning for tomorrow, next week, the next month, next year. You're already wrong.
Yeah.
And so how wrong are you willing to be? Mm. What gaps in your work are you willing to have? And that can be really difficult for a lot of technical people who are very accustomed to accuracy and precision and flawlessness. But the goal that we have is to try to get to those objectives, that goal, that mandate. And if that means getting 80% of the way and that's good enough, wonderful.
Yeah. And I think the other consideration, just whilst I'm thinking about it, is the decent research studies, i.e. the content that people have invested a really lot of time to produce really valuable insights and data from, are often behind a gate. Yeah. So if you look at, you know, some of the bigger ones, you know, McKinsey, Gartner, all of that sort of stuff, either you've got to be a member with access to those resources, or you've got to exchange an email. Yeah. What I found is that it was good at finding the source, but when you go through to the page, it just gives the preview and the highlights of the research and the study. So it's only pulling through that really high level stuff. We're not really getting into to the nitty gritty, but of course, we shouldn't be allowing AI to get behind a gate, because that's how businesses work. You know, it's their content and it's their IP, which is then when we get into the territory of ethics, you know, intellectual property infringement, lawsuits, as you mentioned previously. So I think it's murky territory. And I think the web search and the research piece, as I said, is still got a way to go.
Right, for sure.
Yeah. So maybe if we move slightly away from AI, and it is all related. So your expertise, and I see it all the time, you're a bit of an Excel master. You know, I've seen stuff on Power Query and all of that sort of stuff. It is something that's not going away. So I'm going to an Excel event in London in a few weeks' time. There are still MVPs, people like yourselves, that are training finance pros on how to get the most of the tools that are less unknown than the AI, right? Mm-hmm. So when you're thinking about use cases for these tools, because I should imagine that you've worked with some really large companies that are still using Excel, right? So from the perspective of somebody working in FP&A, how do you right size and pick the tool? And from your work, you know, what are the best use cases for Excel versus like an EPM, like you mentioned earlier, for example? So I don't know whether you can run us through some scenarios and some of the recent stuff you've been working on.
The use cases for Excel are as broad as you can possibly imagine. I mean, it's used by almost a billion people all over the world. It's the default finance and analysis and planning tool for companies everywhere. It's not the right tool for every company all over the world, everywhere. But the reason why I am partial to Excel, at least at the outset of anything that I do, is it's the best sandbox. And you can do just about anything that you need to do in a rough sketch or rough model, even if you're with a Fortune 10 company. Yeah, there's analysis that you can do, even though you might be needing to do it on tens of millions of lines of data. You can still work on a sample within Excel and do the analysis there. So what I will often do is I will use Excel as the sandbox or as the blueprint for bigger projects, and then say, this is the foundation of what we're trying to do. This is the essence of the analysis or of the plan. Is Excel really the right tool to use in this case? And for a lot of really big corporations, the answer is generally no. That's how I usually approach it, is start with Excel, but then identify what are the bottlenecks that this company is going to be experiencing. And for a lot of the bigger ones, those bottlenecks are significant and they appear quickly. In terms of when's the right time to move over, you know, I don't want to be too cliche here, but a lot of companies are just, you know, they're like, Excel just doesn't cut it anymore. It's just too frustrating. It's too clunky. These models take too long to update. They're too error prone. We have mistakes all over the place. Only one person knows how to run this thing. And so a lot of the complaints that people have about what Excel is not can be addressed by these more robust EPM or planning platforms. What's also nice about these EPMs and planning platforms is they can be one-stop platforms. So you don't have to have this platform here and another one here and another one here and another one here. a lot of the movement that's been taking place in recent years is these planning platforms that are gobbling up other companies or organically evolving to be able to be the one-stop platform that a company needs. In addition, because of that integration and connectivity that the software has, you don't have to spend 2 days updating an Excel model. You can just simply refresh your data on the back end. It flushes through into your planning tool and you're good to go. So I've had conversations with, I'm not going to advocate for any one of them. Many of them are very good. But I've had conversations with directors or heads of FP&A who are on these platforms, and they say, yeah, when we need to do a roll forward of a forecast or an update of a scenario, it takes less than an hour to do that. Whereas when we were on Excel, it might take a couple of days. And we were a little bit nervous in terms of the likelihood of making mistakes. So there is a tremendous amount of work that can be done in Excel. Again, I am partial to it because it's my drawing board for most companies. But once they start complaining about it doesn't scale, it's too clunky, one person owns everything, it's too error prone, that's usually the time in which it makes sense to explore other solutions. And also recognizing that a lot of these platforms are moving down channel. So years past, this was only available to Fortune 1000s because of the price tag. Whereas now you can get companies that are, you know, $3 million companies that can get a little bit more robust planning platform that goes a little bit beyond Excel.
And you mentioned there the Excel drawing board. When you tackle a project, and I imagine you've probably accumulated quite a lot of templates or, you know, sort of base models that you start from rather than having to start from scratch every time. Have you got any recommendations for how people can start going about equipping themselves with a useful starting point without giving any insider secrets or any of your IP or anything like that? But to speed up that process, I guess to reframe that, it's, you know, how do I make sure that I start with the right template in Excel rather than having to start from scratch every time?
Sure. I'll rewind the clocks back a little bit to the earlier parts of my career. And this is a mindset that I developed. This is what I teach. This is what I encourage anybody who's listening to this to adopt. Is when you're in the middle of building something, have a lot of situational awareness and say, ooh, if I had built this again from scratch, how would I have done this differently? How could I have built this in a way that would have been a lot cleaner the next time I do it? What can I do now that's not going to have to unwind everything, but it's going to speed this up? So it becomes this constant iterative process, but the iteration is not on one file. It's throughout your whole life and your whole career and all your work of saying, okay, I learned this. This worked really well. I'm going to do this the next time. I did this. This was a mess. I'm not going to do that again. And so you start to iterate yourself and your ability so that the next time you build something, instead of it taking 3 days, it takes 2 days. The next time it doesn't take 2 days, it takes 1 day. The next time it doesn't take 1 day, it takes 3 hours. And the benefit that I have having my own business and having lots and lots of companies I've worked with over the years is I have a whole library of assets. And so what I can say is, all right, I've done all this iterative improvement. This was a really good model, or this was a really good work file, or I worked in this, you know, online retailer over here. I'm working with an online retailer over here, very similar to the one that I did a year ago. Let me leverage some of the assets. Now you have to be a little thoughtful because there could be some proprietary information. There could be some confidential information in there, but rather than start from scratch at level zero, say, look, if I could start this 50% of the way, 20% of the way, that's worth it to me. But then it's also going to save the company or the client the anguish of having to build something completely from scratch. There is value of having some standardization and templates that you can leverage again and again and again. But that comes with time and situational and self-awareness to say, what are the best practices that I can start to bring somewhere else?
And it's interesting, it's got me thinking about, and I think the book was Effortless. It's on the top of the shelf. I had to turn around just to have a quick look. So it's Greg McEwen, who is actually a Brit originally, but now lives in the States because his wife is American. And he's got really good podcasts, which I would recommend. It might just be called
The Essentialism.
Essentialist Podcast or something like that. Top 10 US podcasts is good. You know, lots of actionable stuff in there. So definitely check it out. But in that book, there's a chapter that describes the concept of starting from zero. Because as you've just alluded to there, you can get really deep into a process and you can't see, you know, the wood for the trees because you've invested that much time in it. And you think, right, if only I invested a little bit more time, I might get a better result. Whereas in fact, as you said, sometimes you need to take a step back and say, right, well, what if we started again? What does the start from zero looks like to basically facilitate the least amount of steps to get to the same result?
Mm-hmm.
So I pose the next question to you, and again, feel free to not answer this because you might not have an answer, but I've been in that situation before where I've been building in Excel or I've been trying to write a bit of code or whatever, and I'm in my 10th or 12th iteration of that because I've tried to change a formula or I've tried to rearrange something. Is there a point, is there a number of iterations where we say, time out, too much time on this, and then do we go to somebody else to say, can you help me with this? Or, you know, can we use AI to say, look, I'm stuck here. What's going on? Do you have any recommendations for the point to chuck in the towel and start again?
Yeah. So, you know, there are a couple of points I would raise here. One, and I teach this, I mentor this, I train this. And again, pretty much every group I'm ever with, every company I'm ever with, is I always talk about the importance of going all the way to the end of the process first, of what's your mandate? What's the objective? What are your goals? What are you trying to do? Rather than just starting at zero and building from the foundation to the next level and the next level and the next level, start at the finished picture. And once you know what you're trying to do, that sets the stage, that sets the process, that sets the expectations for your building. Because if you have to build something that's really, really detailed, you know that through your diligence assessment. If you're presenting to an executive and you don't need this level of detail for that individual, that's a different mandate. So that's the first thing, is thinking about what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and what does that need to look like throughout the entire build process. But then the second piece that I think is really important, and maybe even goes back to that 80% good enough, that 90% good enough, is we often don't need to get to 100% to be able to make good decisions. If you're planning for the future and you have forecasts, you're already wrong, right? You're planning for tomorrow, next week, the next month, next year, you're already wrong.
Yeah.
And so how wrong are you willing to be? What gaps in your work are you willing to have? How confident do you think you have to get to in order to say, you know what, this is pretty good. This is good enough. And that can be really difficult for a lot of technical people who are very accustomed to accuracy and precision and flawlessness. But the goal that we have is to try to get to those objectives, that goal, that mandate. And if that means getting 80% of the way and that's good enough, wonderful. But we have to have that situational and self-awareness and take a look at those different, you know, points all throughout our process of saying, okay, is this good or do I need to redo this? Is this good and can I move on? What about this next phase? Is this where I need to be or do I need to reformat this? Let's move on. Let me sit down with Adam. Adam, this is where I am right now, 4 days into this. Is this what you want? That's what we're constantly doing, is revisiting. Instead of saying, I'm going to start from zero, I'm going to build from scratch, and when I get to the end, I'm going to stop, and I'm going to hope for the best. That's not how it works.
And I think you're dead right there. I think you could almost split it as well. So if it's a drawing board for you personally, that nobody else needs to see, then it can be messy, I guess, you know, providing you get to the output. You know, if you've got a load of rows and a load of, you know, dodgy formulas, you know, it's not so much of an issue. But when we then start trying to translate that and tell the story, that's when we need to get that outside opinion that says, how does this look to you? So as you've said there, maybe a recommendation is, right, well, I've built 50%. but maybe I just need to know that I'm still pointed towards that outcome. So who can I speak to that's going to validate this for me and make sure that it is working in the way that we'd set off to do, essentially.
Yeah, and I'm going to say one last statement is, for whoever is the creator, I always say the statement, this isn't about you. Right? Yes. So if you are tasked with a project and you're the doer, it's not about you. You're doing this on behalf of a team, somebody else, your supervisor, your boss, your director, your manager, the company, the executive, investors, whoever it might be. If you are building in the way that benefits others and not just in the language of you, that's usually positioning you for a more successful product.
Quick one, guys. I'd like to take a moment to invite you to the AI Finance Club. The AI Finance Club isn't just another professional group. It's a dedicated platform to help finance pros integrate AI into their work. Now, with AI revolutionizing every aspect of business, staying up to date and building AI skills is no longer an option if you don't want to get left behind. So with a membership, every month you'll receive a live workshop with industry experts, including me, to help you apply AI in practical finance scenarios. You'll get an in-depth review of the latest AI tools tailored for finance, so you know what works best. You'll get customized AI prompts to help transform the way that you work, curated news and updates on AI advancements in the finance sector, and deep dives into AI in finance processes to help optimize your finance operations. Now, personally, I do believe that a hive mind approach to learning works wonders. So on top of what I've already mentioned, you will have access to a community chat where you can connect, share, and learn from a network of finance professionals who are all embracing AI together. Now, as a Tech for Finance listener, you'll receive 10% off your first annual subscription, plus you'll receive free access to the entire ChatGPT for Finance course, both the videos and written guides. Now, to take advantage of this offer, go to techforfinance.com/AI and enter the code ADAM100 at checkout. Once again, that's techforfinance.com/AI with the code ADAM100 at checkout. See you there. And so something else that I've been experimenting recently, and this is going back to AI, sorry to come back to that again. But I was very interested once they started announcing the multimodal stuff in the large language models. So GPT-4 now can recognize images. Copilot, Bing can recognize images. Yeah, but technically it's just using GPT in the background. But Google Gemini through Bard can now also recognize images. And there was an interesting study, actually, where they sort of put OpenAI and Gemini head to head. And actually, they're similar results in terms of image recognition. So, you know, if you are looking at a model for image recognition, if that is your own use case, then Bard, OpenAI, there's not going to be too much difference. But the reason I mentioned that is sometimes you don't always have somebody that you can call on immediately for feedback. So I thought, right, you know, let's just take a screenshot of maybe a busy presentation slide, feed that into the AI to say, this is a slide I'm working on, I'm presenting to non-finance professionals, what's your perspective? What improvements would you suggest? Sometimes, and this comes back to the expertise thing, it will just give you a pre-gurgitated set of responses that you could have guessed yourself. Yeah, you can answer those questions. But sometimes you get a little nugget. And sometimes it's a little reminder of something that you've forgotten, but one of those points in the response could be actually something really useful to say, huh, yeah, I've forgotten that it's good to have one message per slide. Or it's important that I make sure that I've got my annotations and my headings correct, because otherwise people aren't going to know what I'm showing. Do you know what I mean? So that's the first thing. But related to that, coming back to Excel, I did a bit of an experiment in assessing how well large language models can manipulate, not in the form of generating code to manipulate spreadsheets, but give instructions on how to rearrange a spreadsheet, for example. So it was a very simple use case. It was, I've got a table on this sheet, and I gave examples of the formulas. It was XLOOKUP. It was one of Paul Barnhurst's, I think, just one of the templates that he's got on his website. And first I got it to explain the XLOOKUP formula, which was really complicated. They all did a pretty good job of explaining how the formula works. So that was a tick in the box. But the next part of the exercise was, right, well, here's a screenshot of the table. So you can see the columns, you can see the rows, because sometimes the AI can't infer where the table is on the sheet without you having to either upload the data or tell it what columns and rows you're looking at. And I said, I want to move this table to another sheet. And they couldn't do it. they could not give those instructions. The only viable instructions were doing it manually to say, you're going to have to rekey your formula with these cells, which technically was correct, but I wanted it to update the formulas for me, but it couldn't get that perspective of the relationship between the table in one sheet and the table in the other.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So anybody who is trying to use AI to do validation, please tread carefully. It's always best to find a person. There might be some quick wins if you are using AI to analyze, but it's never going to give you this perspective, an actual person with feelings and with an opinion. So I just thought I'd mention that because I found it quite
super important points. And I've had similar experiments where it can't figure out what I'm doing. What I'm doing is the same thing I've been doing for decades, but it can't understand it. And it says, I'm going to rearrange it. I'm going to rearrange it. I'm going to rearrange it. And it keeps saying, well, that didn't work. That didn't work. That didn't work.
Yeah.
And then finally it comes up with something and it is a result that you would never, ever put in front of somebody.
No.
So it might be conducive to the machine being able to analyze it. But in terms of real people, to exactly the point you just made, it is not prepared nor positioned to be able to do that.
And I don't know whether you've managed to get any sort of access to the Office Copilot. It's still a bit of, you know, uncharted territory. Enterprise customers with Microsoft can access the Office Copilot, where you get the Excel Copilot, for example.
Right.
But to smaller businesses and independent guys like you and us, you know, we can't just pay for an Office Copilot.
Yeah, I don't have access to it yet.
So it's limited. But I have seen some demo presentations and I have had some feedback from MVPs on LinkedIn, as I'm sure you see, in terms of how well that Copilot works in Excel. And it's a similar theme to what we've been talking about today, whereas it's good, but actually it's not really that good. You know, and simple examples like conditional formatting, you know, there are, you know, ways that you need to reprompt or do you know what I mean? So I think people who think that this Copilot is going to be that silver bullet that immediately supercharges our Excel spreadsheets and enables us to be, you know, extraordinary modelers just by asking a question, I think we're still, you know, months, if not years off having a viable product that does do that true virtual assistant from an Excel perspective.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, that's, I think it's an important point to make to maybe some younger professionals is you've got to learn these skills. You've got to develop them so that one day when you start leveraging the tool, you know when it's right, when it's wrong, and how to utilize it to get you a little bit further. You know, I use ChatGPT to help me with Excel of saying, this is what I'm doing. Is this the most effective way or is there another way? And the reason why I know that the answers are right or wrong is because I've got a lot of experience and I'm already at this level and being able to get here is easy for the machine to coach me. But if I'm down here and I'm using the machine up here, I don't know whether that answer is really the best one or not. And that's where danger comes in.
And I think you're right. I think coming back to the point you made earlier about the shortcuts and doing the stuff that's easier, people want to jump to the perfect output straight away.
Yeah.
And it's also what I see a lot when people are talking to AI is they try and create this perfect prompt that's going to give them the answer straight away. Whereas in fact, they need to think of it in steps and say, start here and then continue to chat with the AI until you reach the output. So seeing more as a conversation, i.e. an actual human chat rather than just an AI giving an answer.
Right.
But I think coming back to that, Richard Nero, who was on a previous podcast, so he's based in London in the UK over here, he had some interesting perspectives on how to use AI, not from a give me the answer, but in terms of how do I achieve this? So he said, pivot tables, for example, instead of saying something like create me a pivot table based on, you know, this, ask it, how do I do this? And I think that's going to be more valid for junior team members, because instead of, again, having to sign up to a training course or come to somebody, you know, that is in their organization that maybe as you know, coming back to the levels, instead of bugging somebody, you can get that baseline to say, right, well, this is new territory for me. Can you give me a step-by-step walkthrough of how I start thinking about this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the key. Junior members of staff should think about thought process and how do I tackle this, rather than somebody like you who's got that experience that can say, can you validate this and check I'm on the right track, right?
Yeah, I think that that's super valid, not just from a directional correctness of the work product, but to be able to learn, to be able to say, well, if I were to do something that I don't have any experience doing, can you teach me what the individual steps and the logic would be? I mean, it's a logical tool. And for a lot of the work that we do, logic is really the essence of it.
And it's what excites me, actually, because, and everybody's different, but I came from a, you know, sales background originally, you know, but I've always been into sort of personal development, productivity hacks and all that sort of stuff. And the more books you read and the more you learn, the more you realize that learning is a skill in and of itself. So learning is a meta skill because, right, you know, the more knowledge you have, the more, but it only works if you actually put it into action. Yeah. Right. And Alex Hormozi does some brilliant stuff around this. He said, if you read something but do nothing, you have learned nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it's only when you put it into action that it becomes real. But learning is a meta skill. So if we can use these tools, whether it be Excel or whatever, to speed up that learning to the point where we become experienced quicker. So you mentioned the timeline of 10 years, you know, maybe it takes 2 or 3, but either way, we've got those productivity gains in a shorter time span, providing that we use these tools in the right way, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a wonderful thing to look forward to, is that rather than, I mean, it might completely change the way that we go about our education systems in the developed world. Instead of saying we're going to go to school for, you know, 12 years or whatever it is, that might be 6 years. We might end up having young kids ready to enter the workforce at a younger age just because they're that smart and they're that capable. Or because information is just changing so rapidly, rather than having a 4-year university degree, you go to school for 1 year, you go work for a few years, you go back to school to retool because the world has changed that much, and then you keep going back and back and back. But the technology is going to make the learning so much more efficient and effective, and arguably condense the amount of time that it takes somebody to get to the place where you and I have had to get to. But, you know, through the traditional way, young people coming up through schooling now might be a whole lot more effective at learning and applying versus us.
Yeah, I hope so. And the example that I always give from my education, and I'm not bashing the education system, because as I say, you know, everybody should learn and everybody should upskill and be in that setting whereby they are being taught. But I remember almost nothing of my younger education. You know, in the UK, it's primary, secondary school. I know in the States, it's obviously high school, college and that sort of stuff. My learning began at university or college, because it's then that I actually got stuck into projects and working with people. Until then, it was all hypothetical. You know, yeah, I can learn a little bit about science and what a protein is and what a carbohydrate is and all of that sort of stuff, but I'm not going to learn until I eat the food and lose weight or get fat. You know, and it's a terrible example, but you hear what I'm saying, right? So I echo your point there of getting into doing something as soon as possible, because that's the quickest way of learning.
Right.
So, and it is a bit of a tangent, but I need to ask this question because I've had some people in my community that are embarking on these projects. So moving a little bit on from Excel, you manage data, and you okay for time? We've come up to an hour. Is it okay? Okay. So more people talking about use of Power Query. Now, I know you mentioned data. Obviously, Excel is not the tool if you want to be, you know, dealing with hundreds of thousands of lines of data, right? But I know you do a course on it. And again, obviously people need to check out the course if they want to learn more. But for people that are getting started with Power Query or haven't even looked at it, can you walk through some of the use cases, at what point it's a good tool, and some of the things that you can do with it?
So I will answer it in two parts, is what's the value of the tool? And then I'm also going to wrap a little bit of AI into it. So it's a wonderful tool, similar to my answer before of, well, when does Excel hit its limits?
Yeah.
If you are working with hundreds of thousands or millions of lines of data, Excel starts to get a little clunky. It starts to be a little bit tricky to work with. In addition, a lot of Excel users have data coming from different data sources. And rather than copying and pasting or having all these external links, which cause lots of problems, The best approach is to be able to have what I call a phantom link between your active model, whether that's Excel or Power BI, and those backend sources. The analogy I sometimes use is, you know, OneDrive or Dropbox. So it's not always feeding all of this data to you, but there is this phantom connection between where you are and where your data is. And you can call on it whenever you want. Now, the beauty also is not just the connectivity that you have with your backend data. It's also the ability to shape and format it. So if you have a backend system that has all kinds of raw data and it's just not set up, formatted, queried in the way that is most useful to your planning, modeling, analysis, or review, you end up having to do all kinds of work on the back end. Or what a lot of people in FP&A do is they clean it all up in Excel. And a lot of people think, oh, Carl, you know Excel really well. You must really favor that. The further back you can go into your data, that's where you should go. If you can't go into the ERP or to the EPM and clean it up there, well, if you can bring it into Power Query, basically dragging and dropping and clicking buttons along a ribbon. I mean, this is a no-code experience. You can format and position your data the way that you want so that once you import it, it's beautiful, it's clean, and it's usable. Now, let me bring in AI really quickly to this. Is I know Power Query quite well, so much so that I teach it. However, I still make mistakes, just like I make mistakes in anything. And there will be some times where I'm in Power Query and all of a sudden I end up with an error. And I say, I don't understand why this error is here. And I go into all the prior steps and I say, I can't figure this out. I don't know why I have an error here. Well, I can go into a ChatGPT and I can say, I am working in Power Query. This is what I'm trying to achieve. Between this step here and this step there, I'm ending up with an error. What could be some reasons why I'm having an error? And it will give you a list. You identify which one is most likely correct. You zone in on that. And then you can perhaps even grab some of the code within M code in within Power Query, punch it in and say, in this stage, this is the code that I'm using. Why might this be problematic? And it will explain to you what might be the problem. And again, if you know enough, it's just tool. It's fuel for you to be able to say, oh, I know how to fix this because it's coached me here. Whereas if you don't know Excel or Power Query or coding, whatever it is that, that you need to know, and you just get the response from ChatGPT and you plug it in, I wish you well, I hope for the best, but you don't know whether it's right or whether it's wrong. That's why having the assistance of the machine with the expertise and the awareness that you have of your domain is such a powerful partnership together.
And that's what I like specifically about code and querying code in AI is you can instantly validate that. So I developed a little app for help with the podcast in terms of splitting video files. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Do you know what I mean? But if the AI generates the code and it works, that's it. That's
and you push to break it a few times just to make sure that it doesn't break under some external circumstances. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's real-time feedback.
Yeah, fabulous. No, we really appreciate that, Carl. So, I mean, yeah, so I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, Power Query, obviously, with the data formatting and the ability to handle data outside Excel or whatever tool that you're using, could potentially be a happy medium between just using Excel and then investing in a full-on business intelligence platform, for example, on the middle ground.
Right, absolutely. So there are going to be companies that say, look, we use Excel, we need Excel, we love Excel, but it has its downfall in clunkiness, size, scalability, and many of those points I had raised earlier. But they say, well, we don't want to move away from Excel. What can we do to just enhance our use of it? And there are tools out there, and again, I'm not going to name and advocate for them, but they are basically Excel add-on tools that sit on top of Excel and give it a little bit more robustness. But companies that don't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars on an add-on tool, leverage Power Query, leverage some additional add-ons and functionalities within the Microsoft suite to just give you a little bit more control and power over what you're already doing, just being able to do it a little bit more effectively.
That's it. And then it comes back to the end use case, doesn't it? What you said previously, what's the outcome? Yeah, because again, it's silly to assume that this tool will always be good for this outcome. So work back. It could be that the business is in such a state where actually no tool is going to help you before you get your data right. So it's always worth asking those questions.
Right. Important to get your processes right and your data setups correct before thinking that a tool is going to solve all of your problems.
Yeah, that's it.
So people, again, it's an iterative improvement.
Yeah. People, process, platform. That's another shout out to Chris Ortega, who I had on the...
Love
one of the early podcast guests. So no, good. Right, I've consumed too much of your time, Carl. So I'll ask you the last question I always ask my podcast guests, and then you can tell people where to find more about you. And that question is, the podcast is called Tech for Finance. What is a tool, gadget, Google Chrome plugin, app on your mobile phone that you couldn't live without in either a personal or a professional sense? You can't say ChatGPT. Yeah, you can't say your smartphone because that's a cop out, and you can't have Notion either, because earlier on in the podcast we had about 10 people say I use Notion in a row. So
okay, so I'm gonna give you two, and I'm gonna give you two real quick. So this is about a month old. This is my Remarkable 2 writing tablet. I use this thing every day, all day long. Total game changer, because I don't have to have notebooks over here and over here and over here and over here and not remember where I wrote something down. So that's number one in terms of a tangible product. Number two, I stumbled upon this about a year ago. There is a Google add-in called Autocrat that essentially allows you to enter certain data into a Google Sheet, declare them as variables, and then you can insert those variables into a PowerPoint, a document, whatever it is that you want to do. So for a lot of the certificates that I issue, I used to do it manually. I used to type in somebody's name and the date of the program and the name of the program and the certificate number. Then I got smart and I offloaded it to an assistant, and then they started doing it. But instead of doing all of that, we just put all of the registration information, all the attendee information into a Google Sheet, hit run, done. Creates dozens and dozens of certificates, and guess what? It emails them all out.
See, I love that. Never heard of it before. People struggle to find tools that I haven't heard of before. We've had a couple recently. Remarkable 2. I've got a friend that uses one of those as well. He says it's a game changer. So it's because you can write on it, can't you? It's literally a writing tablet, and then it converts your handwriting into text.
Correct.
Yes. And write, and it's still in the digital format. And then Autocrat, AUTOCRAT, which is Google Workspace. You can find it on the Google Marketplace. Fabulous. Carl, where can people find out more about you?
You can visit my website at sidemanfinancial.com. I have lots of information about my advisory services, my training programs, my mentoring, etc. You can also find me active on LinkedIn, where I share a wide variety of insights, tools, tutorial videos, files, and more.
Yeah, they're amazing. Definitely follow Carl on LinkedIn. As I say, he's been a source of inspiration for me and my content. So yeah, definitely click the follow button. All right, Carl, absolute pleasure having you on. Appreciate your time. I'll let you get off.
Thanks so much, Adam.